Welcome to the Passion Podcast, where we get an opportunity to delve into conversations with our guests that sparks passion and growth. I am your host, Dr. Raza Khan. We are delighted to have Dr. Siti Mahroof join us. She is a physics faculty at Carroll Community College, and she is also the founding member of Community Compassion USA, a nonprofit organization in our local community in Baltimore. Siti, I know you came to U.S. from Sri Lanka. Can you share the reasons of why you came to the United States and also your journey from Sri Lanka to U.S. and how you landed to where you are now?
Foremost, thank you for having me. As you mentioned, I was born and raised in Sri Lanka. Also, I completed my physics bachelor's degree in Sri Lanka. Since the universities in Sri Lanka didn't offer many physics programs at the time, I had to travel overseas. This is what led me to the U.S. The journey to where I am now has been long and challenging. But I must say it was adventurous too. My husband was in the same journey, which made it easier as we helped each other, as we navigated the new country, new culture, and the systems.
So can you, for our listening audience who may not understand why people do come here, can you share why leave your family to come to the United States?
Well, it's a choice that I had to make.
So you were not a refugee then?
No, I was not a refugee at all. Like I said, I wanted to pursue higher education, and there was no opportunity in my country for me to do a PhD in physics, definitely. So I had to look out elsewhere, and United States, UK was another option, but United States was much cheaper in terms of money, so that's why I came here.
And then can you explain where you got your higher degrees from, higher education degrees?
In Sri Lanka, in the University of Peradeniya.
And then here in the United States?
Here, Wayne State University, Detroit. That's where I did my PhD.
Okay. And then what brought you to Carroll?
Well, I applied in many places. It may be true for many, many people. You apply many places and you find, you get hired in many, you get offers in many places and you choose the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Siti, it is almost incomprehensible for some of our listeners who are born in this country to have never had that feeling of being separated from your parents, your brothers and sisters and cousins. So I know other than your husband and children, all of your family is in Sri Lanka, which is a deficit when it comes to family support that is needed during very trying times. So our first theme is going to be on perseverance. And I don't want to make you emotional because I know you are very family oriented, but what did perseverance mean to you when you were in Sri Lanka? And how do you define it differently today after earning your higher education credentials?
Yes. So growing up, perseverance meant staying laser focused and not bothered by other distractions. The determination to reach my educational goals was very strong, that any adversities and challenges didn't bother me or hinder my progress. I would like to share a story, an experience that I've had.
Please do. We love stories.
There was a particular period of time. There was a civil unrest in my country around the time I was preparing for my A-level exams. As you may know, A-level exam is a very important college entrance exam. Everything had come to a crippling stop at that time with no public transportation, no businesses opened. But I had to make it to this particular private math class that I had signed up for. It was very important for me to go there. So my father decided to walk me 5 miles to catch a bus, which eventually took me to that destination. On the way, I witnessed dead bodies, charred bodies, still smoking from the previous night's unrest. Now you may wonder why that didn't affect me. But I was able to block out all those negative images because, again, my focus was on education. I think you ask also about what perseverance means now.
Yeah.
Perseverance for me now as an adult is same. that is to stay focused and goal-oriented. But now it is more challenging because my life is more than just focusing education, is now multifaceted. I have personal life, I have a family life and a work life. So I have developed time management skills to be able to balance these things and still stay focused.
So Siti, one of the reasons I started the Passion Podcast and you're a perfect example is to share stories. It is unimaginable for people to even comprehend that you trying to get to do your well on the A-level, which is the entry exam to college, had to walk miles in front of the charred bodies and not stop. It is unimaginable even for me to do that. And I think one of the things we don't do good at is we don't have autobiographies, but I think we don't share our stories, whether it is with friends, families, or in our classrooms. And just for our listening audience, as a disclaimer, I am your colleague and I'm your supervisor, and we have worked together for 10 years in multiple capacity other than our role as faculty. And I didn't know this about your story till now. So kudos to you for persevering through those very tough times in Sri Lanka. As I said, I know you're very emotional when it comes to family, and so am I. But I think the more we share, I think the better people understand. And I think that's what we all are looking about, is understanding and reflection. So thank you for sharing that. I know it must be very tough for you to do so. But what is something from your past that did require perseverance, and how did that experience led you to live how you live now?
So earlier in my career, after finishing my graduate studies, I had to take an extended break due to having multiple pregnancies. As you know, I came here with my husband, meaning I needed family. That means I had to have children. So multiple pregnancies and related health issues kept me away from work for 10 years. So this led to a significant challenge re-entering the workforce. So during that time that I was tackling those issues, I also took some measures. So I took up a low-paying tutoring job at a two-year college. I attended conferences even though I did not present, which allowed me to actually network and to know what is going on in the real physics world. I also completed a teacher certification program during that period. So all of these things allowed me to re-enter the workforce and work up to the job I have right now. Even though it was daunting, I persevered through those difficult times.
And it is interesting to note that, right? This is something I didn't know about you. But again, since it's personal, I don't share that. But I'm happy you share that with the listening audience, because when people look at you, they say you have a PhD in a scientific field. You must have done really well since college, and they hardly know that you were out of workforce for 10 years, but trying to come to workforce, you had to take some extra measures there. So again, I think, you know, these stories are the reasons why I have this Passion Podcast. Okay, so let's go a little bit deeper dive into your subject matter, which is physics. Probably physics is the central science, and it's not said so. I think chemistry is the central science, and you and I can have a very long debate on that. What is true is physics has been known in higher education as a challenging field. So I'm not going to assume that I know everything, which I don't, because you will surprise me. So how challenging was it for you to get a terminal doctoral degree as one of the very few women in the entire field of physics?
Well, I don't particularly believe that physics is challenging. I think it depends on who you ask. For example, if you ask me about biology, I would say it's much more challenging than physics. Also, when you do PhD, the area becomes much focused, and much more specific. The area become something that you are passionate about. And so it's going to become easier as you go along in the PhD program. As far as being a female physicist, I found it a bit challenging in social settings, but in an academic setting or in work environment, since our focus is mainly on work, being the minority hadn't bothered me at all.
Okay, so that's good to know. So what is the carrot at the end of the commitment that makes you persevere through challenges?
Well, after the years-long journey through my career, I can now say that I'm happy. I feel independent. I feel strong. I feel confident. And I feel empowered. Knowing that I achieved these feelings through my work fuels my perseverance through challenges.
So let's maybe focus a little bit narrower to our students, whether they are in public school, high school students, or community college students, or students who are in the first 4 years at a college, at a four-year college. So as a faculty in science, what would you tell the students as to what is the secret recipe that students need to persevere through their education?
That's a good question. So long ago, I would have simply said, spend more time. But with more and more students working to support themselves, I would say the secret recipe is to build excellent time management skills, because you really don't have that much time. So poor time management skills, as you may know, will lead to last-minute cramming. That will lead to shallow learning, missed assignments, and poor grades, which can eventually lead to not completing college successfully or dropping out.
Yeah. So, you know, Siti, you know, this is the Passion Podcast, so I'm going to ask you this. So what role does passion have in your perseverance?
Passion has played a huge role in my steadfastness, I think. No one was really pushing me to pursue physics or even a career in the United States. We didn't even dream about coming here to the United States when I was growing up. So I believe without my passion for this field, I wouldn't have made it to this far.
Okay. So Siti, we are going to move on to our second segment, which is authorship. And I consider authorship as a leadership role where one is able to not only take ownership, but is able to accept failures. So for me, that is authorship. So I'm going to go beyond the leadership position, but let's tackle the leadership first. So what does leadership mean to you, both as a team member and as a team leader, both in your professional role at the college and also running a non-profit foundation?
Yes. So that's right. So I'm in both places, I have this leadership roles that I'm assuming. So for me, leadership means more than one thing. It means being a source of information and expertise. It means having a deep love and passion for what you do, and that passion driving you to encourage and support the people around you. It also means being able to identify and make use of people's various talents, because people come with different abilities and disabilities, of course.
Yep. So I introduced you as just simply a faculty at the community college, but you are not just faculty. You do much more. So for the listening audience who may not know who Dr. Maruf is, can you kindly share with us what leadership role have you taken on in your professional career?
I have taken many leadership roles within and outside of my professional career. Professionally, I served as a physical science program coordinator for 3 years at the science division at Carroll Community College. And currently, I serve as the program director for the associate degree in physical science with 3 concentrations, chemistry, geology, and physics. In this latest role, I lead a faculty of 6 in making sure that the program runs smoothly, finding ways to increase enrollment and retention through marketing efforts, making professional connections with transfer institutions, and leading the annual assessments and much more.
Okay, that's awesome. So as I said, when I think of authorship, I look at both leadership titles, but also look at the ownership of those tasks that are someone is leading. How important is ownership of any task for a professional?
Well, ownership is the driving force, I think. Ownership is the driving force for of your operation as a professional. So I think ownership of my task is very important, being able to shoulder responsibilities and take accountability in the only way to ensure that you accomplish your goals successfully in a timely manner. Otherwise, you'd end up with lousy end results, I think.
Yeah, very true. So we're going to move on to what a leader aspires to sometimes, and maybe not the right carrot, but it is one of the carrots, and that is success. So what is your definition of success? And has that definition changed from what you used to think it was, let's say maybe 10 or 20 years ago?
Success for me is being able to set and achieve goals with specificity and intent. This definition hasn't changed much for me over the years. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. So you are a mom to four beautiful children, I believe, right?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just making sure. what does success mean to you when you look at them as a parent and at their successes, whether it be their academics, sports, or friendship? And if you're comfortable, please do share about your kids too as well as to what they're doing right now.
Yeah. So I have a fifth kid. It's my cat.
I'm sorry, five kids. Four humans and one
animal.
One feline.
Yeah. When I look at my children, I define success for them as productively working towards a future where they can support themselves. That is very important for me. And maintain a holistically healthy lifestyle. So that's why I push them for sports as well. So currently, my oldest completed her BS degree in computer science in UMBC, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. She completed it successfully. Before she finished, she actually have a job right now. My second one is in UMD. She is in biology area.
She's the University of Maryland, College Park, right?
Yes.
Okay.
She just finished her first year. My last two are still in high school.
And is the cat potty trained?
It's not potty trained, but he's a good boy.
Okay, that's good. Okay, so since you are surrounded by students at Carroll Community College, what advice would you give to the students who are also parents so that they can complete their education? So we're looking at the non-traditional students.
That's right. We have quite a number of those students. You know, I have, of course, have four children and experienced this as a full-time worker and a full-time mom. I cannot imagine the stress that being a parent while pursuing an education entail. Obviously, this is very difficult. I really don't know how to even answer this. And I would say to them, don't beat yourself up for slipping up or making mistakes. You are balancing multiple daunting responsibilities and obligations. So go at your own pace, I would say. Do what's best for you and your family, and don't compare yourself to others.
Okay, that's really good advice. So not only you have strived to be successful, but you have also made sure that others are successful as well. So with that, I believe you have written a Praxis book. Can you help us understand as to what was the catalyst that led you to write that book? And you saw that I sneaked in the chemistry word catalyst in there.
That's right. Well, I wrote the physics practice. It's a practice exam book for Praxis exam. I don't know if you know that physics practice is a required exam for to be physics teachers. So I decided to write this book after passing my own Praxis exam with a near-perfect score. I remember coming home from the exam and feeling so confident in my performance. I actually remembered every single question on that exam that I thought I could create my own questions and be helpful for those other people who are doing this test. This is what led me to finally write this book.
Okay. So, Siti, many people who know you as an educator. But very few people know that you're heavily involved and invested in service in your own community of residents in Baltimore region. Can you share with us as to what organization are you involved with and what are the benefits of such service?
So as you mentioned earlier, I'm a co-founder of the nonprofit organization called Community Compassion USA. Currently, our work is fully within the Baltimore area and feeding the less fortunate in our own our own backyard. That is our main goal. We do this with the monetary support that comes with from the local community. So in addition to distributing hot meals, we also have social welfare branch. Through this, we help families with short-term difficulties paying rent or buying groceries. We provide burial assistance and re-entry support. So we have, so far within the short time that we existed, about 3 years, we have given out 10,400 hot meals.
Wow.
Yep. So, and then 12,500 iftar dinners within the community.
So there's definitely a need for service.
Definitely there is a need in this area.
So who has been you? So when I look at the work you have done as part of the organization, so who has been your mentor when it comes to the service?
My father. Just like yesterday we heard at the convocation, my father, hands down, to put plainly, he himself was a very simple person. He loved to give. His face would light up when he was able to make another person happy. In our country, panhandlers would come to our doorsteps. And while many people looked down upon them, my father, on the other hand, enjoyed giving them, especially food. And I think I got the love for service from him.
So I kind of know why volunteering matters to you. But still, I'm going to ask you, why is volunteering your time for others so important to you?
I have seen so many people who are suffering, especially in my country, here too. It is hard for me to see anyone suffering, whether it be people or even animals. So I would do anything to ease that situation. Volunteering is in this way allows me to reach out to those in need.
So, Siti, you know, when you have to give time for service, people look at time as money. What would you tell those whose answer for considering volunteering is that they just do not have the time?
Right. Well, that's right. People would say time is money, and that is true too. The phrase, I don't have time, in my opinion, is really only in your mind. You can always find time to do something you truly want to do. Besides, you don't need to do this full time. Spend a couple of hours per week or even just 1 hour. If you think about it, collectively, if everybody does that, we can accomplish a lot.
Yeah, and that's very true. So I'm going to, I think it's a good leeway to our next segment of optimism. I think, you know, anybody who provides service, there is some optimism, if not greater optimism of a better day. So how do you stay optimistic when things are not working the way you expected?
So, Raza, you know, what keeps me optimistic are the lessons I learn. Mm-hmm. Lessons I have learned from those I consider the most successful people in the world. If you read their biographies, you will see that most of them have gone through all kinds of difficulties and adversities, but are still called giants in their respective fields.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have some in chemistry too.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah, through these historical examples, I have learned that temporary failures are only stepping stone for success. So that's
exactly. Yeah, I think everybody should be, not look forward to failures, but embrace failures and move on from there, right?
Right.
So it's a cliche, but let me just ask you anyway, what do you say to those people who see a half full glass of water as half empty?
Well, those are the people who are not optimistic, in my opinion.
Yeah. What do you say to them?
Well, I would tell them, when you see an obstacle or some adversity in life, look at it in a positive light, which will give you positive energy. Now, this is physics.
Yeah.
Positive energy will propel you forward. We know that, allowing you to overcome that adversity. So that's what I would say.
Okay. And I'm not going to write a physics equation on that, am I? Okay. So no quizzes, by the way, in the end. Back to the service and optimism, I want you to reflect deeply on this question, perhaps, that when it comes to your volunteer service work, what makes you optimistic that your good work matters?
My volunteer work mainly involves feeding less fortunate people. Because we are locally based, I'm able to see the community's appreciation with my own eyes. Knowing that there is a real need for our assistance and achieving tangible success, even with something as simple as providing a hot meal is enough for me to know that what I do matters.
Yes, and it does matter, by the way, Sithi. So you alluded to the importance of networking when you had a stopgap in your career. So let's go to networking. How has networking helped you get to where you are now? So elaborate on that a little bit. And then is your life significantly different from what it would have been if you didn't network?
Yes and yes.
You want to keep it short?
Two yes. No, I like to elaborate, actually.
Yes, sure, please.
I have a long story, but I'll keep it short.
No, no, I love stories. You're passionate about stories, yes.
Without networking, I wouldn't have made it to where I am now. Re-entering the workforce after a 10-year break seemed impossible. It would have been easier for me to stay home. A person in my professional network, actually, at that time when I was looking for a job, told me about a tutor position at this 2-year college. So that is my first network. First time the network worked. The tutor position paid only $20 per hour. But I accepted this job not for the money.
And you had a PhD.
I had a PhD.
So I just want to listen for our listening audience. We are having a faculty member recall that with a PhD, she took a job for $20 an hour.
That is exactly right.
Yeah.
Because I wanted my foot in the door.
Yep.
And that is where I am going to find my people, where I can network. And sure enough, I made friends. I made good, strong friendship, professional friendship with the faculty at that college. And as soon as a position opened up, they highly recommended me for that position. So I took up that position, the adjunct teaching position. And that gave me a lot of experience in higher education, teaching in higher education. So that's what propelled me to where I'm right now. I was hired as a full-time assistant professor just after that here at Carroll Community College. And I worked here about 5-6 years as an assistant professor. And then now I'm promoted to associate professor.
Yeah, congratulations, dear Sithi.
Yeah.
So Sithi, when people ask me, why do students look at me as a mentor? I don't think I'm a mentor because I don't have any quotes attributed to my name. But I think one role that the mentor plays is when you open the door for yourself, you allow others people to walk in through as well. So as the door, when the foot in the door opens up, I keep it wide open so that I can allow at least one or two, if not more, people to walk in. So who has been your mentor thus far that you have relied on, and what role have they played in your own mentorship?
Well, my best mentor has been my husband, without a doubt. He's my husband of 27 years now. Who has extensive experience in the industry and in workplace matters. So I can always expect honest and thoughtful guidance from him. And that guidance has helped me in countless situations to make important life-changing decisions. So I would say it's my husband.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad. I'm hoping he's listening. Because really, he would not get kudos on here. So we are coming down to three questions that probably are looking at the 30,000 feet bird's eye view picture of your life and career. So first of all, can you share a quote that best sums up your life thus far and why it resonates with you?
Eleanor Roosevelt once said, "You must do the thing you think you cannot do." I think I have actually accomplished a lot of things that I thought I couldn't do. I think this really sums up my ability to embark on seemingly impossible tasks along my life.
Okay, that's good. So we briefly touched on your immigrant journey, your higher education, your life as a mom, as a faculty, and as a founder of a nonprofit organization. So what metamorphic process have you gone through as you transformed during your own lifetime?
I definitely feel that certain characteristics have taken a different form or strength as I have gone through the different stages of my life. Independence has dominated a large part of my myself, starting from high school, going into college, moving to a new country, and finally becoming a parent. Living mostly outside of my home, even during high school, I was boarded in a different house.
Mm-hmm.
And being fully responsible for myself has made me as independent and resilient as I ever.
Oh, that's awesome. And I, again, I jokingly said, I hope your husband was listening in. I still hope he's listening in, but I do hope that your children are listening in because they will be very proud of their mom. So Siddhi, we touched upon perseverance, authorship, success, service, optimism, and network, which are the raw ingredients of passion. As my final question to you, and that question I pose to every single guest that I have on the show, what is your purpose for who you are or who you want to be? And what do you want to be remembered for?
I want to be remembered as that person who cares about others and shares with others what I have, whether it is my knowledge, my service, or my wealth. In a sense, I believe my purpose is to help and support those around me by any means. So that's what I would say.
Very awesome purpose, a very noble purpose, Siddhi. Siddhi, thank you for joining us and sharing your stories and reflections with us. To our listeners, let us all be inspired by what Dr. Siddhi Mahroof shared with us to embody what passion demands of us: perseverance, authorship, success, service, innovation, optimism, and network. Each one of us has the power and can truly make a difference for the better, for a better tomorrow for all of us. Till next time, thank you. Thank you, Siddhi.
Thank you so much.